It's the NPR News Update for Monday, September 29th. I'm Phil Picardi, and today on the podcast, quick, what are the issues shaping the election campaign? We'll run those down for you. Minnesota's West African community mobilizes, and getting the homeless to run. First, leaders in the Twin Cities Somali community made a plea last night for better opportunities for youth. About 75 people attended the meeting in the Cedar Riverside area of Minneapolis, which focused on combating the recruitment of Somali youth by extremist groups. Ilhan Omar is a board member of the Confederation of Somali Community in Minnesota. She says it's important to look ahead.
I'm hopeful that at least there are people thinking more about, like, what do we do now? And so giving resources to people who are willing to reach out to these youth and give them an alternative to the people who have isolated and taken advantage of them, that's something to be optimistic about.
Next month, Minnesota's U.S. Attorney Andy Lueger will meet with the Department of Justice to discuss programs and funding for a pilot program to thwart recruitment. Lueger compared it to a battle against drug dealers and gang members.
This is something we're doing together. This is something we're doing to solve or help solve a problem. It is not the government attacking this wonderful, peaceful, thriving, large community. You deserve to have this wonderful community grow and live and prosper in peace, and I want to help you do that.
The U.S. Justice Department chose the Twin Cities for that pilot program. The city of Minneapolis is working towards a pay-by-phone parking meter system, which it plans to roll out citywide early next year. Annie Baxter reports.
The Minneapolis City Council has decided to pursue a vendor contract for the system with Atlanta-based Park Mobile USA. John Wirtjes is director of traffic and parking services with the city's Public Works Department. He says the pay-by-phone system would allow drivers to use an app to pay for parking, and drivers would get text message alerts when the meter's about to expire. Wirtjes says drivers would have to pay a fee with each transaction, but there's a way to reduce those fees.
If you do a whole bunch of small transactions, it adds up really quick. But if you buy they call it a wallet or a purse, and you put $20 on it with the vendor and the vendor's decreasing that purse, you get hit once when you put the $20 on. So there's a little bit of savings in regards to credit card costs.
Wirtjes expects to start testing the system later this year. Annie Baxter, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Strong demand is leading to greater access to 3D printers in the Twin Cities. Martin Moylan has more.
Last year, UPS put 3D printers from Eden Prairie-based Stratasys in six stores outside of Minnesota as part of a pilot program. There was a lot of interest in the devices among small businesses, inventors, artists, and others who wanted to create physical objects from digital design files. Now, another 100 UPS stores, including one in downtown Minneapolis and another in St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, have the sophisticated $21,000 printers. Bruce Bradshaw is director of marketing at Stratasys.
UPS is definitely charting new ground with this. They're the first to really do this with a professional flash industrial type of a printer.
The machines lay down layers of plastic to produce items of up to a half a cubic foot in size. The cost, $25 per cubic inch. So printing an object about the size of an iPhone would cost $150. Martin Moylan, Minnesota Public Radio News.
State regulators this week are expected to give Minnesotans a glimpse of next year's Minsure rates. Matt Sepik reports.
Minnesota's Commerce Department is preparing to release the rates. The agency has the final say on the premiums insurance companies may charge. But Minsure spokeswoman Jenny Bowring-McDonough says it's just that, a snapshot. She says customers will not know exactly how much they'll pay until open enrollment starts November 15th.
At that time, you'll be able to come through and see exactly what you or your family or your small business might be eligible for in terms of cost savings, and if perhaps income level precludes a cost saving, you'll be able to see what else you might be eligible for in terms of coverage.
This month, Preferred One, the least expensive of the Minsure plans, dropped out of the exchange for 2015. The company said staying on is not sustainable. However, Medica, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Health Partners, and UCare will remain. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Republican gubernatorial candidate Jeff Johnson's campaign is about to get a boost from New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. Christie, who chairs the GOP Governors Association, will be in Minnesota on October 13th to campaign for Johnson. Christie is just across the border in Hudson, Wisconsin today, campaigning for incumbent Governor Scott Walker. Democratic incumbents, Governor Mark Dayton and Senator Al Franken, debate their GOP challengers for the first time this week. Here's Mark Zedeklik.
Franken and Mike McFadden will take the debate stage in Duluth Wednesday morning. Dayton and Jeff Johnson will debate in Rochester Wednesday night. McFadden has criticized Franken for not being supportive enough of PolyMet's effort to open a copper nickel mine outside of Hoyt Lakes. McFadden says PolyMet's permitting process has taken too long. Franken says he's supportive of the new mining, provided it can be done without harming the environment. Johnson has criticized Dayton on a number of issues, including tax increases, a new state office building, and for authorizing union votes among child care providers and home health care workers. Dayton says he's restored state government to good financial shape and increased funding for education. Wednesday's forum will be the first of three face-to-face Franken McFadden debates. Dayton and Johnson have agreed to five debates. Mark Zedeklik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Jobs, terrorism, health care, just what is this year's election all about? Unlike past years when campaigns focused on the Iraq War or the recession, it's a little harder to find a clear campaign theme this year, especially in the race for Congress. Instead of candidates presenting positive messages about what they want to accomplish, most of what voters are hearing are negative messages about what's wrong with the opposition. Brett Neely has more.
In a time of deep political divisions, perhaps it's no surprise that there's not even any agreement about what issues to fight about. Some campaigns and their allies want to play to the public's discontent with Congress. Here's an attack ad Republicans are airing against DFL Congressman Colin Peterson in the rural 7th District.
23 years in Washington. Somewhere along the way, Colin Peterson stopped helping us and started helping himself. There's the least.
Peterson says the attacks against him are personal because this year's campaign isn't really being fought over substantive issues.
I don't think there's any overriding theme that developed out of this.
Democrats are using the personal wealth of Republican candidates against them. This ad from the campaign arm of National Democrats paints 8th District Republican challenger Stuart Mills as an out-of-touch plutocrat.
It's not your typical fish story. Stuart Mills III caught a big inheritance and a job at the family business that pays $500,000 a year.
But it's a theme Al Franken's Senate campaign is also using against Republican Mike McFadden. For Republicans, this election is all about President Obama's unpopularity. They'd like to halt the Obama administration's momentum on a number of issues in its last 2 years, says Republican State Senator Tory Westrum, who's running against Peterson.
Regulations. We need to get the EPA and rein in this big government, whether it's Obamacare, whether it's the EPA out of control.
While many Democrats think the debate about health care is mostly settled and aren't emphasizing it on the campaign trail, at least one Democrat thinks health care should be a bigger part of the debate this fall. Democrat Mike Obermueller. He's running against Republican Congressman John Klein in the 2nd District.
Thinking, talk about how we're going to rebuild the middle class, making sure that you've got access to affordable and, you know, reliable health care is a big deal. And people still talk about that a lot when we're talking to people at the doors or on the phones.
Still, the health care law and environmental regulations generally haven't played the same prominent role this year as they did in the 2010 midterms. In fact, a recent poll by the Pew Research Center found little agreement between Democratic and Republican voters on the issues most important to them this year. That may explain why campaigns seem to be rallying those who agree with them rather than trying to change anyone's mind. John Klein says campaigns don't have much control over what issues are debated. Instead, the news cycle is driving the debate this year.
Right now, there is so much angst because it's in the news everywhere about ISIS that has taken over the narrative.
Indeed, Republicans now seem to believe national security and terrorism may be their ticket to victory in November. Here's a recent ad from the campaign arm of House Republicans that attacks 8th District DFL Congressman Rick Nolan.
What we don't know is why Congressman Rick Nolan voted to release terrorists held at Guantanamo Bay and then voted against funding for our troops fighting the war on terror.
NPR's Polygraph found those claims to be misleading to the point of being false. But for his part, Nolan says the campaign should be about congressional dysfunction, which he most blames Republicans for.
The single most important thing that I hear over and over again is when are you people going to start working together and get something done and fix things? There is no theme that comes even close to the number of people who bring that up with me.
John Klein says he hears that criticism a lot as well, but he says voters should keep in mind that congressional dysfunction is actually a symptom of a larger problem.
Well, there's frustration, and has been for some time, where people say, why can't you work together and get things done? And one of the problems is, frankly, is that America is split.
And it's unlikely the outcome of this election will change that fact. Brett Neely, Minnesota Public Radio News, Washington.
Nearly 3,000 people in West Africa have died from Ebola this year, the largest outbreak in history. About half of those deaths have been in Liberia. President Obama is sending U.S. troops to the country to help fight the Ebola outbreak. But that's not the only help from the U.S. Liberia will receive. In this latest installment of NPR's Young Reporters series, Taka Zen tells us about some of the mobilization efforts in Minnesota's West African community.
The Liberian community in Minnesota is one of the largest outside of Africa. And when something happens there, the effects are often felt here. The Ebola outbreak is no different. Dekunti Sawyer is one of many Liberian Americans in Minnesota who have lost loved ones. Her husband Patrick died in July. He worked for the Liberian government and traveled back and forth between the two countries. His death was high profile because he was the first American to die from the Ebola virus.
It affected me, you know, and my family in ways I couldn't have imagined or anticipated. Some of the biggest impact had to do with my own mental health and that of my six-year-old, who is now asking me a lot of questions.
Sawyer has three daughters, ages 6, 5, and 18 months. She says the oldest has been grieving while trying to make sense of what she's been hearing about her dad and the disease. Sawyer is a trained mental health counselor who specializes in working with trauma survivors. After her husband's death, she got therapy for her daughter and for herself. She talked about her experience at a recent meeting of the African Ebola Task Force at Brooklyn Park City Hall.
We try to protect our children, and there's only so much you can do, and I found out that some things were out of my scope of being her mom. She needed professional help.
Sawyer is starting a foundation to help others experiencing the very same thing. It will offer mental health support to families that have lost a loved one to Ebola and other infectious diseases. Sawyer also wants to provide financial support, educational awareness, and scholarship funds for the children of Ebola victims. She says it was through her own grieving process that she decided to help others.
A lot of the things we're doing are things that I'm experiencing myself, because I'm in that unique position of being directly affected. So some of my needs I'm looking at and saying, this is what we should offer our demographics, so counseling, because I'm doing it.
The African Ebola Task Force, formed over the summer, is educating the local community about the deadly virus. Many of the group's members come from West African immigrant communities. They're working with the cities of Brooklyn Park and Brooklyn Center, which have large West African populations. The task force has several projects. Some focus on sending medical supplies, others on providing accurate information about the disease. Winfred Russell is a leader in the Liberian community. He serves on the task force. He says there have been a lot of questions about the disease, especially from local school districts.
Parents had come forward and expressed issue with their children playing with children from West Africa. So the school district and even the local colleges around is like, okay, can you guys help us to put together some sort of message that we can send home by the kids to their parents so that they know, they understand how Ebola is spread and how Ebola isn't spread.
Efforts to educate the community are coming in many forms, including a recent prayer service at the Spiritual Church of God in Robbinsdale. The event was part informational, part spiritual. It featured updates from the State Health Department and prayers from local pastors.
We don't need another political uprising.
About 75 people attended. Some asked health department representatives why the disease was spreading so rapidly. Others were concerned about the stigma. Kalita Wisnat owns a restaurant in Brooklyn Park that serves West African cuisine. She told the crowd how fears of Ebola are affecting her business.
So I get a lot of feedback on customers that have stopped coming
to eat out of fear because it's an African restaurant. And we have people that, you know, are skeptical of coming to the restaurant or patronizing African food restaurants because they're possibly thinking that they might catch a disease.
Health officials at the event assured her that the disease was not spread through food. As the Ebola virus continues to wreak havoc on Liberia and other parts of Africa, a number of pastors offered solace through prayer. Pastor Paul Turner was there from the Minneapolis-based New Creation Church.
We come to you with this world-shaking event that is happening on the continent of Africa. The Ebola disease that has taken so many lives already and is poised to take many more.
Dekan Tesor isn't waiting for Ebola to take any more lives. She's taking action. Her foundation is collecting medical supplies to send to West Africa to help fight the virus.
People are dying. And when people are dying and we can prevent those deaths, why not?
I'm Taka Zen, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Closing out the podcast today, Tim Nelson runs with the homeless. Morning Edition's Kathy Werzer has the intro.
Yeah, we can line up on the crooked line.
This isn't the kind of life on the street story you probably expect to hear about a bunch of homeless guys.
I Merck gets it. Jock.
That's Mike Yarasitz, the leader of a Minneapolis running club that aims to reach residents at Higher Ground, a Minneapolis homeless shelter. They're trying to get homeless men on their feet and literally on the road to a better life. Tim Nelson has the story.
It's called Mile in My Shoes. The running club started in June with a simple plan. Get what might be some of the most unlikely runners in Minnesota to lace up and hit the pavement.
Melvin!
Guys like Dave Baker.
I was basically a delivery guy, so there wasn't enough work to sustain what we were doing. So I've been unemployed for a little bit over a year.
And he's among the scores of residents at the Catholic Charity Shelter on Glenwood Avenue, just west of downtown Minneapolis. He and about a dozen other guys have been getting up at dawn and heading down to the lobby twice a week to get in some miles. They're joined by about a dozen other runners who come along to get some exercise and keep them company on Tuesday and Thursday mornings.
I saw the sign for this around Memorial Day. Said, you know what? We all need some exercise, so it just seemed a good thing to do.
It isn't a lot of miles Baker and the rest are running. Their last workout was just over 2. They aren't breaking any speed records either.
Morning, everybody.
Morning.
Today's route, we are going to be going up to Target Field and doing the 30-20-10 workout. For those of you that have not done it before, it's 30 seconds of jog, 20 seconds at a moderate pace, and then 10 seconds fast.
That's Mike Jarasitz. He and his girlfriend, Mishka Verton, lead the morning runs. They live nearby in the North Loop. They're longtime runners and recent transplants from New York City.
Regroup. Keep moving.
Clubs there and in Philadelphia have led the effort to bring the benefits of the most basic exercise to homeless people. Jarasitz is a musician by day. Verton is a social worker in St. Paul. They're doing this in their spare time and trying to figure out how to turn it into an actual nonprofit.
Pick it up a little.
For now, it's an unofficial affiliate of Catholic Charities. Verton says they keep their goals modest. They aren't trying to win any races. They know running itself won't get someone a home or a job. But Verton says just running is a tangible start.
If anybody needs an opportunity to be able to have a stress reliever, to be able to have a better outlook in the morning, to have a community of people supporting them around them being positive, that would be someone who finds themselves waking up in a homeless shelter.
Verton also works at Mill City Running, a Minneapolis running shop. They sell Mile in My Shoes t-shirts. Every sale provides a shirt to the guys at Higher Ground. But that's not all.
Through Mill City Running, I've met a whole lot of sales reps for different shoe companies, and they have been just so generous to us in donating shoes so that everyone on the team can have them.
Manny Taitingfong put on a pair of those shoes in June. He's been living at the homeless shelter for about a year. He says he can already feel the difference from 3 months of running.
Oh, yes, lost a lot of weight.
How much?
I lost about 35 pounds. From 255.
But the real difference probably can't be measured in pounds or miles. Amanda Harmon is a case manager at Higher Ground who joins the runs.
I think especially for the clients here, it's a good part of normalcy into everyday life. Being with everyday people, it's really good for mental health. Being positive, feeling good about life, reason to get up.
And Catholic Charities says for these runners, that's a step in the right direction. Tim Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
I'm Phil Picardi, glad to bring you Minnesota's news on your schedule. It's the NPR News Update podcast, and I'll have it again tomorrow.